nurse practitioners prescribing satisfaction, vaccines preventing pediatric strokes, death dealing a health worker pause, and we'll look at an old drug problem for poison centers and emergency room healthcare professionals with Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center on Kratom. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, our podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for checking out our program this week. We've got a great show coming up for you. First up in this week's nursing news items, we'll be looking at a story on best practices for dealing with a patient's death in a healthcare facility. Find out how some facilities are taking a pause after the death of a patient to help the nurses and others process this special moment. Then in this week's tip segment, we're going to be joined again by Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center to talk about a new but old drug of abuse. Kratom is a naturally occurring plant leaf from Southeast Asia, and now this leaf and the drug it supplies are making their way to Europe and the United States via internet vendors. So what can nurses and other healthcare professionals do to prepare for and look for this drug? Well, we'll find out a little bit more about that later on in this episode, after the news. Before we get to the news, though, I do want to make sure you follow up on all of the information you get from me each and every episode by heading over to the Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com. Check out the links in each episode's show notes. There are also other articles and information there, so I want you to head over there and check all that out. There's the free Nursing Show mobile app. There's tips for student nurses, a lot of things. So make sure you're heading there and follow up on what I talk about in the show each week so you understand how it's applied to your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. Please drop me an email. You can always send those emails in to me here at nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I will get back to you. I respond back to all the emails that come in. So send me things. You can send me links to an interview idea for somebody, or perhaps an idea for a news item. Whatever the case may be, please keep those emails coming. That's it. I'll have some more contact information coming up later on in this episode, but it's time to get on into this week's news items, and they are coming right up. Kicking off the nursing news this week, let's take a look at a study on diabetes and patient care and the satisfaction of those patients out of the UK. You know, in the UK, more than one-third of diabetes primary care clinics are run by nurses, some of whom have prescribing ability for the patients. Now, these patients are usually more satisfied, or at least just as satisfied, as the patient care they receive from physicians, and the research shows similar outcomes for both groups. The use of primary care clinics to manage diabetes patients is standard in the United Kingdom, and they don't use specialists only for, they only use them for the most unstable or complex patients. So about 80% of the primary care practices in the UK actually have a special diabetes management nurse on staff. Many of these nurses also have the ability to prescribe medications for their patients who need them. The study looked at the lab values of patients in all of the clinics, both physician and nurse run, over a 6-month time frame to see whether the blood sugar management and the subsequent outcomes for these patients were different between the two groups. Now, the researchers found no significant difference between the glucose management and the A1C levels in either group. The patients also showed similar self-care scores, and the nurses group showed higher patient satisfaction scores. Now, this may be because the patients spent nearly 8 minutes longer when working with the nurses than they did with the doctors who saw them. Now, this comes around in my book to supporting the nursing theory of patient care. The patient education focused, the holistic care that we are all trained to provide, all figure into this. So I'm going to keep watching this, and I'd like to see a similar study here in the U.S. to see if there are ways we can improve outcomes and satisfaction with similar nurse-run programs here. Next up in our news for nurses, let's take a look at reducing the risk for child strokes. A recent study could tie reducing that risk with the application of simple treatment with standard childhood vaccines. We all know that the risk of strokes in children is small, but pediatric strokes do happen. And researchers have discovered that the risk increases whenever these children have any kind of cold or flu bug. This discovery leads us to looking at the prevention of those illnesses through a variety of methods, and that includes vaccination. The risk of stroke increases up to 6 times higher when a child has had a recent ear infection, recent bronchitis, strep throat infection, or seasonal influenza. So when a child has had no or few standard vaccines, that risk for stroke actually goes up even higher. Now, this just supports again the need for us to focus on getting children vaccinated, not just for the regular series of shots, which all children should receive, but also for things like the seasonal flu. All of these things prevent illnesses in children, especially those at-risk children, like those with other concurrent illnesses. So we need to focus on these kids. We need to be proactive with the promotion of vaccines, especially to those parents with kids with these chronic diseases. These parents may wonder if their kids are even candidates for vaccines, and it's up to us and other healthcare professionals to encourage and educate them to get the standard vaccination package and educate them about the safety of vaccines. Promotion of the other prevention methods are, of course, important too, like hand washing, but this is a good look at vaccines and the importance of these things. I'll be focusing on more pediatric care topics in the future here, so make sure you check back here at the Nursing Show for that. Finally, as we wrap up our news for nurses this week, I bring you a look at a story I picked up over at the Kaiser Health Network site. It looks at the challenges faced by nurses and other healthcare professionals when dealing with frequent patient death and dying. The story is one about a trauma nurse who runs into dying patients in her facility all the time. Their trauma team struggles to save difficult patients, and then they die. They just move on to the next patient. They don't stop and think about what happened, and this can cause issues. So this continuously facing death and dying take a toll on them and maybe give them problems they need to deal with. So the nurse in the story tells a tale of one such situation where a hospital chaplain came in just as the patient died, and after the patient was pronounced dead, told everyone to stop in the room and pause for a moment while he prayed over this patient. Now, while not everybody was comfortable with the prayer aspect of it, they talked later and discovered that the pause felt, well, they said right. So the next time a patient died, the nurse in the room decided to do something similar. Now, there was no prayer, but the nurse said he just stopped everyone for a moment and asked them to recognize the life of the person in the center of the room who had family, who loved them, and who had led a life on this planet before they died. After the pause, the nurse simply thanked everyone for their efforts and told them to go on with their duties. The rest of the team thanked him for taking this moment of pause. The concept of this pause after death has actually now spread throughout their entire hospital and has had great positive effects. It's now being taught as part of their curriculum at the University of Virginia Nursing School, and even local EMS crews are picking up on the practice for deaths that happen in the field. And it all started with a nurse who recognized the needed intervention and applied it to the underserved patients in his care, well, in this case, his coworkers. Kudos to him for innovation and recognizing a need that has, as usual, a surprisingly simple fix. Kratom is a plant or tree indigenous to Thailand and Southeast Asia, and it's the same family as the coffee tree. But since 19th century, fresh kratom leaves have been chewed in this part of the world as an herbal or medicinal drug to increase work productivity and, interestingly, treat diarrhea. Today, it's more commonly used for its psychoactive effects, and its popularity seems to be increasing. In the United States and other countries, kratom is typically consumed in capsules or as a powder, but it also can be made into a tea. Many different kratom products are actually available for purchase, often over the internet, each with its own distinctive set of supposed curative or mood-enhancing properties. So I thought we'd bring Lisa Booz in from the Maryland Poison Center to talk about this drug and the challenges that are being faced by healthcare professionals like nurses and EMTs and paramedics who encounter patients using and abusing this plant-based drug. So check it out. Hi, Lisa. Welcome back to the show. We're looking forward to whatever our topic is this week. And it's, if I understand correctly, something I've never even heard of before. So I'm looking forward to learning right alongside the listeners here.
Hi, Hi, Jamie. Yeah, what I want to talk about today is a drug. It's actually a drug of abuse called kratom. It also can be, the name can be sounded out as kratom or kratom. We hear all different ways of it being pronounced. But kratom is a plant or a tree that's indigenous to Thailand and Southeast Asia. And it's actually in the same family as the coffee tree, believe it or not. Since the 19th century, people have been chewing the leaves, the kratom leaves, in that part of the world as an herbal medicinal drug to increase their work productivity, so sort of like for a stimulant effect, but also have used it to treat diarrhea. Now, today it's more commonly used for its psychoactive effects, and the popularity of this drug seems to be increasing. In the United States and in other countries, kratom is typically consumed in capsules. It may be a powder. But it also is often made into a tea. There are a lot of different kratom products that are available for purchase, usually over the internet, but also in some convenience stores and other venues. And they each have their own distinctive set of curative or mood-enhancing properties and potencies. According to the DEA, other countries are currently reporting some emerging new trends in the use of kratom. In the United Kingdom, for example, kratom is promoted as an herbal speedball. In Malaysia, kratom, which is known there as ketam, they're producing some juice-like preparations, and it's illegal, but it's widely available. Now, in Thailand, it's illegal to plant the kratom trees, and it's categorized as a narcotic, but it's a really popular drug of abuse that's widely used in that country. It's a legal drug in the United States, but we don't really know how prevalent the usage is. It's not really known because it's not included on any of the typical drug abuse monitoring surveys that we do in schools and surveys with adults. Kratom itself contains more than 25 different alkaloids. The primary alkaloid or ingredient is mitragynine, and it's an opioid receptor agonist. So it acts on the same receptors as your oral opioids, or even heroin. A metabolite of that alkaloid is called 7-hydroxymitragynine, and that's more potent than mitragynine. It's even more potent than morphine at opioid receptors. And so that's the constituent that's thought to contribute significantly to the clinical effects that we see when people use kratom. It also has effects on adenosine and alpha-adrenergic and serotonin receptors. So there are a lot of different effects that you can see from this drug. Besides being used for its euphoric effects, it's increasingly being used to self-treat opioid withdrawal. And a number of recent cases that have been called into our poison center, the product was purchased over the internet specifically for that reason, so that people would take it thinking that they're going to treat their opioid withdrawal. Recently, kratom's been gaining awareness also as a natural alternative to physician-supervised opioid replacement therapy. The onset of action is 5 to 10 minutes, and the duration is 2 to 5 hours. So it's pretty short-acting. There are numerous firsthand accounts on the internet blogs and various websites that describe the effects. And when you read them, you can see that the effects are quite different among different people, and sometimes they're even opposite. And it depends on who's using it and how much they're using. In low doses, which is said to be about 1 to 5 grams, kratom is said to produce mild stimulant effects, so you get increased alertness, anxiety, irritability, maybe a slight increase in blood pressure and heart rate. At higher doses, which is 5 to 15 grams, kratom produces some euphoric effects, but this is when it also produces your opioid-like effects, so then they become sleepy and lethargic. Large doses have also caused flushing of the skin, sweating, itching. They can be stuporous, dizzy. Nausea and vomiting is also quite common, and they can have constipation and also tremors. Now, although it does act on opioid receptors, it's unlikely to see some of your more classic opioid effects, like constricted pupils and respiratory depression and coma and death. None of those have really been associated with its use to any great extent, and it's very rare to see serious cases. There have been, though, 3 case reports of kratom-associated seizures that have been reported in the medical literature. The seizures occurred following the acute usage of the drug by chronic users, and I believe in all of the cases, co-ingestants were also present, so it's really difficult to say how much kratom contributed to the onset of the seizures. The serum concentrations, they did serum concentrations of the mitragynine in this particular case or in these cases, and they were elevated, so there might have been some effect from the kratom in producing the seizures. Kratom's also been associated with liver injury. There was a 25-year-old man that was exposed or took in pretty large doses of kratom for 2 weeks, and he developed liver injury, and once he stopped using the drug, the symptoms all resolved and his liver function went back to normal. You can also see addiction and withdrawal symptoms with the drug or with kratom. It's very similar to a very mild opioid withdrawal. Withdrawal symptoms include things like hostility. They might be anxious. They have runny nose, achy muscles and bones. They might have tremors. There have also been cases of kratom psychosis where addicts that have been using kratom for quite a long time, where they exhibit psychotic symptoms like hallucinations and delusions and confusion. Treatment of the effects, if you come across a kratom user, is basically supportive care. It's unclear whether naloxone will reverse the opioid-like effects, but you can try it, keeping in mind that most of these patients, if not all of them, will not develop respiratory depression that you need to use naloxone for. But it is possible to try it if they are lethargic, pretty out of it, and you need to try something. Naloxone would be there in your arsenal of drugs that you can use. Routine urine drug screens in hospitals don't test for kratom or mitragynine, so you won't be able to confirm that that's the drug that they've used. It's important to call poison centers. We want to hear about these cases. We can help with diagnosis and assessment of kratom users and their clinical effects, but also we'll use the data that we collect on these cases to learn more about the drug and how prevalent the usage is of the drug, as well as how likely certain toxic effects are and the best way to treat them. So we would love to hear about all the cases if you come across them. The number to dial to reach the Poison Center is 1-800-222-1222. We're always there 24/7 to help you assess and manage these cases.
And it's really important to note, again, and this seems to be a recurring topic here with your segments recently, that with these newer drugs that are coming into the communities and synthetic drugs, that it's not something you can easily test for in the lab. So when you get the patient into the ED to try to determine what substance they've been using, you really have nothing to go on but a physical assessment in many cases.
That's right. Now, there are ways of getting levels for some of these drugs, but it requires sending them out to outside labs, and depending on what drug it is, even the outside labs might not be able to test for them. And that might take days. There's quite an expense to it, and by that time, you don't really need to know what the drug is. So that's why we don't usually worry about doing that. But fortunately, when we're talking about treatment of these cases, it boils down to supportive care. So there are no particular antidotes or specific antidotes or drugs that we would give if we knew what the drug of abuse was that they took. So it wouldn't change anything as far as the management. Sure, it'd be great to know what these drugs are. Sometimes we figure it out because if there's a cluster of cases, the law enforcement agencies will get involved and they'll analyze the products if they, you know, can get a hold of the products, and that gives us an idea of what the drugs are that are in that particular area. So so sometimes there are ways to sort of figure out what it is, but in the long run, it really doesn't matter when you're treating your patient.
So work with your poison centers, keep in touch with your poison centers so you know what's in the community, and report back to them when you see something that you just don't, you sit there and scratch your head, maybe the poison center can give you a hand.
Absolutely. I suggest calling them for all of these cases so that we can keep track of them, help you out, but also know what to expect in the future.
Well, Lisa, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jamie.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode's show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.